College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
All right, this is the week I circled back in August. It's finally here. Plenty of great matchups coming up this weekend. Can't wait to get Herbie's thoughts on Florida, LSU, Texas, Oklahoma. Also later in the podcast, we tap into our listeners, your questions for Herbie coming up. But as he does every Monday, Kirk Herbstreit joining us to discuss what he saw from the past weekend. Before we get to the games, Herbie, when it comes to humidity and sweat factor, where does Saturday morning in Gainesville rank in your mind?
Oh my gosh. It's been a tough, like, opening 6 weeks for weather and yours truly. My kryptonite is, humidity. And so I sit on the college game day set, and the game day crew, our guys that put our set together, are the best, and they've created this air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
Over the years. And it's become like my blanket. You know, like I can't leave home without my air conditioning thing that they put underneath my spot on the desk. And the rest of the guys laugh at me because it could be 60 degrees out and I still have my air conditioning unit, right? So they're always like, man, I don't want my air conditioning. What are you doing, Mike? You know, Mike's our stage manager, and he's like, well, Herbie has his. Like, man, Herbie's crazy, you know. So anyway, it could be 50. Army, Navy in
yep.
Philly, and I still have the air conditioning unit.
I understand.
So when it's 98%, you know, humidity, and we're in Gainesville, and you're in a suit under the lights, and then you get out and we got to go to the Octagon or the side set. I am just like, oh, I'm dead.
You're soaked.
Just dead in a suit. Everyone's in flip-flops, t-shirts, laughing, holding up signs. I'm like, you see me up here, dress shoes, suit. Like, I'm dying.
The most underrated part of this, you mentioned it quickly. People don't understand. We have the lights. You deal with the lights.
Yes.
And then over 3 hours.
Yeah.
The breeze ain't going to solve anything.
Right. What breeze? Well, there is no breeze in Gainesville. It was one of those weeks when you're down, you know, in the South, and it might as well be July or August kind of days. And there's just no air coming through. And, it was warm. It was fun. I mean, and you knew, I mean, Auburn, they're used to practicing and playing in heat and humidity, but you know, Dan Mullen is getting the Swamp back to being an intimidating environment. And this past weekend was a good reminder. Like I said, I think when I had to make the pick, I said, if this game were in Jordan-Hare, I'm picking Auburn. Mm-hmm. If this game's in a neutral site, I'm picking Auburn, but it's at the Swamp, I'm picking Florida. And honestly, I think that home field advantage and their defense had everything to do with why they were able to get out of there with a win.
And now, you know, great tweet from you this morning with 73 degrees in Baton Rouge on Saturday.
That's the high. I mean, you mentioned a great weekend, a week 7.
Yep.
We've been pointing to this weekend for 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the weekend. And the highlight for me is 73 in Baton Rouge.
As you get ready for a night game, too, in that environment, before we talk about the game and the matchup, give me an understanding what the night environment, give the listeners an understanding what that night environment is like in Baton Rouge, because I've never experienced it, but I'm so jealous of people when they walk away and they're like, oh my God, the ground was shaking. What's it like?
Well, I would put the whiteout in State College and a night game at Tiger Stadium, the two probably as good of an atmosphere as you will see in the country. The thing, as a Big Ten guy, the thing I'll never forget growing up in the Big Ten and thinking that the Big Ten, and they tailgate and they get after it and it's impressive. And that's what you knew. So that's where you're from and that's what you know. And I never forget starting to go years ago going into the SEC, and especially it stands out to me in Baton Rouge, is how the tailgating starts, I'm not lying, on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the campers come in, the kids with the Nerf footballs out are starting to throw the ball, the smokers are coming out, and you start to just smell it in the air on Thursday, late afternoon and into the evening. And so Friday is just like a walkthrough. You know, they go through their deal on Friday. And you would think, honestly, you would think there's a game today. Mm-hmm. Like on Friday, you'd think the game is today. That's how into it on a big game like this in Baton Rouge. And the food for me is always fun to be able to partake in, and whatever region of the country we're in. And that region happens to be my favorite food, so there's always that part of it. But when you have a night game, I don't think anybody prepares for a night game with the food and the beverages the way they do at LSU. Mm-hmm. And so by the time they get to that game, there's such tradition about being an intimidating stadium that whether you're 7 years old or 87 years old, man, woman, children, anybody in between, everybody is into the game. Mm-hmm. Every single person is brainwashed into this is what you do. This is like they taught a class in how to represent Tiger Stadium, Death Valley, and everybody participates. They know every chant, every song, and they take pride that when their defense is on the field, it's not one of those stadiums that a bell goes off. It's third down, third down. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's make some noise. Here we go. It's not that. It's first down. If their defense trots out on the field, they're as loud on first down as they are on second down or third down. And I always tell my buddies in the Big Ten, I said, their crowd is proactive, not reactive. They create sacks. They create fumbles. They create interceptions. And they don't react to a fumble.
Yep.
They don't react to a touchdown. They create things. And so it will be for Florida on an offense that – you know, right now, still kind of trying to find their way and find consistency. That will be a tall order, even though LSU's not yet, you know, been clicking on that side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. Still be a tall order because of the atmosphere there on Saturday night.
You know what I have circled in that game? I have circled the wide receivers from LSU matched up against that secondary with Florida, right? I mean, we're watching a bunch of guys we're gonna that are going to play on Sunday and a quarterback that's going to toss it that we're going to see on Sundays as well.
Dead on. Yeah, the receivers are outstanding. Jamar Chase has had a monster year. Justin Jefferson is kind of an inspired. To me, he's like a spark plug. Mm-hmm. He creates a lot of energy. Very inspiring in the way he plays. So they have great receivers. Joe Burrow, this new system, scoring a lot of points, throwing for a ton of yards. Very aggressive, not flinching in any way at all. And then you got Todd Grantham in the Gators defense and the way they love to pressure a quarterback and the way they love to play on islands and play man to man. You're right. You're going to have CJ Henderson, Marco Wilson. Both these guys are going to be early picks when they decide to go play in the NFL against Chase and Jefferson. Both those guys are going to be playing eventually in the NFL. Joe Burrow is going to be in the NFL. This is going to be good against good. And that side of the football will ultimately decide who ends up winning the game.
We'll see if we'll catch Grenard in that backfield too, and how they protect him because he's block him because he's been fantastic. The transfer from Louisville in this that defensive set there for Florida. We'll be back in a minute with the best thing that Herbie saw this weekend. But first, a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show.
What's the best thing you saw on Saturday?
The best thing that if you go back to even Friday night, I mean, what Cincinnati did against UCF was incredible win for Luke Fickell. Just because UCF gets so much attention, sometimes we forget some of the other teams in that league. That would definitely be one of the things that stood out to me. What Stanford did, against Washington, that was a late, late game, you know, for guys like you and I that stay up and watch those games.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very, very impressive thing to see, probably one of the best things that I saw. If there's one thing that stands out, it had to be the way Florida and Auburn, old school SEC defense, turnovers, who's going to make that mistake late, who's going to make a play late in the games, ultimately going to decide the outcome. And, you know, P. Ryan ends up bouncing off of a tackle and taking it to the house for a touchdown because both teams desperately wanted to win that game. That Florida winning that game for Dan Mullen to remain unbeaten, probably the best thing that I saw would be Florida finding a way to win the game.
I'm with you. And Mullen now 16-3 since he took over. I got new respect for Kyle Trask, too, because that injury looked really bad.
Yeah.
And for him to come back. And, you know, also, it's what Mullen does where he prepares multiple quarterbacks, because we saw Trask come in and he was really good after they lost Franks and they needed to come back on the road at Kentucky. And then Emory Jones comes in this environment, in that situation against that defense, and still finds a way to get points for the Gators. It just shows you that Mullen is so thorough with his quarterbacks and understanding what he wants in his system.
Yeah, and you and I think talked about that a week ago or maybe a couple weeks ago, but I brought it up to him how impressed I was with Trask coming in. And Dent's had other games and other seasons where the backup has come in and not missed a beat. Now, the player deserves a lot of credit because you're getting a ton of mental reps during the week of practice. I talked, ironically, to Dan this week about this very subject, and he said, you know, once you get in the season, the hay's in the barn. It's a little tougher to get the amount of reps you need physically to get that backup quarterback ready. He said, but what I do in the spring and what I do in camp, he goes, with my first, my second, and my third quarterback, is I'll rotate them from the first huddle, the first unit huddle, to the second unit, to the third unit, and I'll mix all the 1, 2, and 3 quarterback into these different huddles. And he said, I'm looking for different things when they're in different huddles. But this way, it allows them to be a leader, to be a playmaker, depending on which huddle that they're in. And it allows him to really grow. And so he does that in spring. And like I said, he does it in camp. And then he said, and then once I'm in season, I'm constantly working that next quarterback and even the third quarterback on mental reps, staying engaged, making sure you're paying attention, get these mental reps. And, you know, it's just one of those things that he makes sure that they're focused on, because you never know when that guy's going to get hurt. And he doesn't want to have to say, okay, well, we got the backup quarterback in. Let's tear half the play sheet in half and let's pull it way back. And now what are you comfortable with? These four plays? His philosophy is, hey, next guy up, let's go. We're not changing. And I thought that was pretty evident in the way they played this past week against one of the best defenses in the SEC in Auburn.
Yeah, Mullen's attitude is, listen, I know what I'm doing. You're going to adjust to my system. Even with Trask coming back with that knee, and then he has a brace, and he's still running plays where he's moving. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're moving Kyle Trask right now against this defensive line. And he's like, I'm not changing anything. We saw that. On the other side, how do you judge what you saw from Bo Nix? Because, you know, there were many opportunities for Auburn to still get back into this game. And, you know, the pick in the end zone, there were a couple of mistakes there, because leading into it, if he throws the ball deep and he hits his wide receiver in stride, that's a deep touchdown. And then the next play where we're on the slant, he's just behind, the timing wasn't right, and then the pick. It felt like there were many opportunities, and then we saw Gus's reaction. How do you judge his performance with three picks?
I have his back, because this kid, I think, is going to eventually be a superstar. I think we've all kind of said all year with what Auburn has been facing. You know, they opened up the year with Oregon. Even Tulane's not a bad team. They went to Kyle Field and played A&M. They played Mississippi State. I mean, it's not like they've had two or three or four games for Bo Nix just to kind of get his feet wet, kind of get acclimated to the college game. And this guy's been thrown right into the fire, and he's coming off a great game against Mississippi State. And I'm sure a lot of people thought, hey, this thing's really going where we want it to go, and no problem. And anybody who really follows college football, and especially the SEC, the defenses that you face on the road, it takes a pretty special, pretty experienced guy to be able to handle what he's going to face. And so the game didn't necessarily surprise me. I know that the sequence of plays you're talking about there, where he had the open receiver downfield, you know, didn't quite execute that one to Seth Williams. He missed the slant for a touchdown, eventually throws the interception. You know, we could sit here and nitpick and talk about, man, what were you thinking? You had a wide open receiver. You know, why didn't you make it a little bit easier for him? It's an easy touchdown. And that's just, that's like, there's going to be two steps forward.
Yep.
There's going to be a step back.
As a true freshman. Yep.
As a true freshman. There's going to be two steps forward. There's going to be another step back. Another two steps. And eventually he's going to become the best quarterback in the SEC. But he has to go through growing pains like this where you're looking at him like, oh my gosh, how did you miss this? But it's not shocking at all. What would be more shocking is if he executed flawlessly the way he did against Mississippi State against that defense in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
That would have been more like, holy cow, what's going on with this kid?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really take, you know, away anything other than welcome to the SEC, you know, Bo Nix, and eventually he's going to get the last laugh, but for now, he's going through some growing pains, and that's life in the big city, you know, for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, the Tigers have now a bye, then they go on the road to Arkansas, then they're on the road October 26th at Baton Rouge. They close out, of course, November back-to-backs. Well, you got Georgia, Samford, and then Alabama, that final game, of course,
Mercy.
The Iron Bowl. And we'll see maybe a different quarterback as he continues to grow. And those two games, the Georgia-Alabama games, are on the plane. So a different environment for him. And understanding what they need from him and the growth of the one thing that, yeah, we are guilty of it is hyping because the story is an amazing story. You know, how he grew up, you know, this dream to be the Auburn quarterback. Now he's the Auburn quarterback, what he does against Oregon and leading that comeback. But the reality is he's a freshman.
Right.
And, you know, you have one narrative where it's like the legend of Bo and, you know, you get caught up in the moment. You tweet about it. I was part of that against Oregon. It was just like, oh my goodness, you can't have a better script for a true freshman making his first start. But, you know, then those narratives work against you. And I feel like that he didn't ask for all this attention. He's just doing his job. And then people judge you differently. And I think if he didn't have that background, people would say, yeah, this is what we're going to expect from a true freshman on the road in that environment against the Florida defenses, which you could consider one of the best in the country.
And keep in mind this about Bo. He's running an offense that requires him to, you know, when you're on the road with that offense, there's so many moving parts to what they're trying to do. You know, I think he's been very fortunate. If you go back to the A&M game, they got up to a big lead early. I think it changed A&M's offensive approach, made it easier for Kevin Steele and what they were doing defensively on how they wanted to put pressure, on Kellen Mond and what A&M was trying to do. Mississippi State, they got out to a big lead early. It makes it a little bit easier to manage a game and call the game in those situations. Whereas, the Florida-Auburn game on the road in Gainesville at the Swamp, you're standing in the middle of the ring and you're just swinging at each other as hard as you can. Those are two or three very, very different sets of scenarios when you're looking at the quarterback play in that offense on the road. So this guy, I'm very, very high on who he is and where he is going in this system because of his skill set. I also like his demeanor. I like how he approaches his job. I don't, right now he's down. He's not feeling real good about, you know, the way this game went, obviously. But, if I'm an Auburn fan, man, I feel great about where I am with this quarterback and with this offense. And anybody that saw a true freshman trot out onto the field against Oregon knew that there were going to be games like this, especially away from home. And that's just the reality of playing a true freshman, and especially in the SEC.
So that wasn't so much of a surprise, his performance. What was the most surprising thing for you over the weekend?
Maybe Stanford beating Washington. That one, and the other one that stands out to me is Virginia Tech and Miami.
Oh, man.
I mean, think about that game. Is Virginia Tech, we talked about Justin Fuente on game day in the morning, and basically we were saying, I don't know if this is a fit.
Yep.
You know, I don't, just forget the Miami game. Where are they right now in recruiting? And last year, the way that season ended and how many players left. And there was an article written about how these players didn't even want to win a game. They have to go to another bowl game. And it's like, man, where are they as a program? And now they got to go on the road to play Miami and they jump out to a 28-0 lead. And it's like, yeah, we'll show you. And then here comes Miami all the way back. And then it goes into the final few seconds, and they're able to hold on and get a win. But that had to be That had to be one of the most surprising things over the weekend.
Especially, keep this in mind, Miami came into the game as 14-point favorites, and they're coming off a bye, and they were coming off a bye after that Florida loss, a devastating Florida loss, and then they lose to North Carolina, and you're looking up, and their first five possessions, it's like pick, 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 and you're like, it's 28-0?
Yeah.
How did we get here? And right. I understand it's a little tough. It's Manny Diaz's first year, and Williams, of course, immediately got benched after the picks, and Kosi Perry comes in, but you just start to sit there and say, were the Canes prepared here? What's going on with this young coaching staff at Miami and Manny trying to figure things out? Not good for the Canes. And that fan base, with the expectations that they had, and also seeing how the way the season started and how close they were against Florida as that measuring stick the rest of the way, are they getting better? I was stunned. And they have some heart where they come back. And then they tie it up, and then backs and misses the extra point, and then they give up that final drive by Virginia Tech. And you sit there and you're like, if you are a Cane fan, you are asking yourself, where are we right now? I have no understanding of the growth of this program. And again, we understand it's early in Manny Diaz's tenure, yeah, but still, you want to see that growth, those steps moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think anybody who knows Manny Diaz on a personal level, almost everybody's a huge fan of his. You know, what he's done as a defensive coordinator from the city of Miami, knows Miami very well, knows what this program is all about, trying to get it back. Starts, as you said, with Florida and a tough game in Orlando, and they ended up losing that game. Really didn't do a real good job of protecting the quarterback and still managed to compete in the game. And then they turn around and lose to Carolina. It's like, my gosh,
you know,
what's going on here? Manny Diaz. And then I think they win a couple games to get to 500. And then you mentioned you're 2-touchdown favorite against a Virginia Tech team that can't do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're down 28-0 before fans even get settled in. And here's the thing with Miami. I've always felt like once they left the OB, I've always been one of these. The Orange Bowl was a unique setting, and that brotherhood and the memories and the history inside that stadium, second to none, right? Mm-hmm.
There was a soul to the place, right?
Soul, yeah. Yes. They tear it down. They build the Marlins, their new stadium. Marlins probably end up leaving Miami.
Yeah.
And you lose all that. And now if you're a student and you're proud of your football team, I don't know, you got to drive up 35, 45 minutes up to go to the game, or you got to get on a bus, or – you know, now your team's 0-2, and you got to, you know, in an era where people are on their phones and they're not going to stadiums a lot. I mean, it's really it's much like UCLA, just a very, very tough set of circumstances to create energy and to create a vibe compared to what they used to have when they were at the Orange Bowl.
Yep.
And so I don't think it's as easy as, Manny, go out and recruit and get some players and let's go win some games when, you know, it's not like coaching at Georgia or Ohio State or Texas where your campus, you know, your stadium's right there on your campus and it's easy to do and get people excited. This is going to be a challenge to build this thing back up and to eventually get them to where they want to be. And for the meantime, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if it's this week or their next game. Is it Friday?
Friday night.
Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
At home on a Friday night. Mm. I don't know how many people you think will be at that game.
Yeah, exactly. After what their performance against Virginia Tech,
on a Friday night.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking 20,000 maybe less.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
And you know, there were certain points in that game where, okay, it's 28-0 and then Miami scores and it's 28-7 and the way they're reacting and the way they're celebrating, I know they're college kids, but I was like, wow, like they're excited about a first down. It's gotten this bad and trying to figure out the consistency of winning and understanding, hey, listen, look at the scoreboard. Let's turn this around. Let's get back into it. And I got to give them credit. They did find a way to make it, make it an exciting game because that second half, you're sitting there, you're like, okay, all right, here come the Canes.
Yeah. Two quick things on the ACC.
Yep.
Don't sleep on the Florida State-Clemson game this weekend with Alex Hornibrook in at quarterback with Florida State. Florida State's issue is not necessarily about being outmanned. Now, their defense has got problems, you know, and Clemson had a bye week to try to kind of figure out what's missing with their rhythm, try to get things going, try to get more balance, try to eventually kind of get it to click. And like I said, it reminds me a lot of where Deshaun Watson was in his last year. You know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when this offense is going to get going. And maybe that'll be this weekend against a Florida State defense that's struggling. But Florida State has athletes, and they love to come in as an underdog where nobody expects them to be able to compete. That's an interesting game to me. I think Clemson's going to win, but I think it has a chance to be competitive. Let's assume Clemson wins out, wins their division, right, in the Atlantic. Who are they going to play? Is Virginia the obvious choice that they're going to play in an ACC championship in the Coastal? Who's going to come out of the other side to play them in Charlotte?
I hope it is, because I want to see a good game, right?
Yeah, I know.
You want to see some competitiveness, and we haven't got that in the ACC championship games the last couple of years with Clemson's dominance. You want to see, if it's a championship game, we've got the best of each side, right? And if we've joked around about the ACC, it's just Clemson, and that gap is so huge that you could start with the fourth or fifth best team and they're all the same teams, right?
Yeah.
That's my biggest concern. And Virginia, I like Virginia. The way they play, and I like Perkins. I thought the way they handled that first half against Notre Dame on the road in that environment, I was like, okay, all right, we've got something in the ACC aside from Clemson.
Yep. Yeah, and their defense, I think, is going to keep them around. Notre Dame's a better team than I think a lot of people probably are recognizing right now. You know, I think to be able to go into South Bend and compete for the most part throughout that game, Notre Dame ended up pulling away and winning convincingly. But that was an interesting time to catch Notre Dame after their trip to Athens. Virginia tried to sneak in there and get a win, but Notre Dame just too much. Now, where do they go from here? We just talked about Virginia going to Miami on Friday. The rest of the games that they play, they do travel to Chapel Hill. And that game, with the way Mack Brown has Carolina playing this year, maybe a little bit tricky. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you've got to believe that they're going to be favored in every game that they play. And, you know, upsets happen. But ACC fans would probably hope to see Clemson, Virginia, and the ACC, because that would be, you know, probably the two best teams, as you said, getting together in the ACC championship. But it's always curious with Clemson's dominating run, who is going to show up on the other side? I've called that game almost every year, and it's always been somebody different. You know, Duke's been in there, Virginia Tech's been in there, Pitt's been in there. You know, so the only team, one of the few teams that has not been in there is Virginia. So maybe this will be the year for them.
We'll be back in a minute. Herbie tells us the most disappointing thing he saw from the past weekend. But first, a word from Carhartt. You know who works hard? Rookies! Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day's another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt is still approaching each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie, and why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years, too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Now back to the show.
So we've talked a little bit about Miami disappointing us. You mentioned UCLA briefly, and of course Washington and what they did in that loss to Stanford. Is there anything else that kind of disappointed you when you talk about expectations coming into the weekend that you saw?
Definitely the Miami game would be the most disappointing thing, unless you're a Washington fan. You know, that one kind of stands out. I don't know if you should be really happy and surprised in a positive way for Stanford, or more disappointed for the way Washington played in that game. And, you know, there are people outside of the Pac-12 region you know, basically since week one saying, well, Pac-12's out. They're already out of the playoff, out of everything. Don't even talk about them. A lot of people want to take shots at them. So when you have one of your kind of your quote unquote bell cows like mm-hmm. Washington lose a game like this, I think most people are cynical instead of saying, boy, that Pac-12, there's a lot of depth in that conference. You never know. You got to look out. I think it's more of a roll of the eyes in saying that there just aren't great teams. And at this point, they're basically down to Oregon. You know, Oregon, yep. After Washington goes down, is that fair to say that
it's the only one, right? And at one point watching the Oregon Cal game, I'm like, oh my goodness, don't do this to yourself. Yeah. Pac-12, right? I'm stunned. I'm stunned because Stanford came in beat up. They've been dealing with injuries all season. Davis Mills looked really good.
Yeah.
I'm just stunned that I felt like Washington had the best chance of all the teams in the Pac-12 to basically come off that loss against Cal, and considering the environment, the situation, that game was a very weird game, right? And that I thought Washington would win out and say, okay, we'll have a conversation now about a one-loss Washington team in this whole thing. But now Oregon – I mean, Oregon's biggest thing was they needed Auburn to kind of win out for them to make that look good on that loss that they had to open up the season. And now you're hanging your hat on the way Oregon plays the rest of the way, because if you want to have them in the playoff conversation, they just need more from Justin Herbert. There's certain times where I look at Herbert and I'm like, you see the NFL body, you see the NFL arm, you're waiting for him to jumpstart drives consistently. Not big plays, but give me some consistency on drives and back-to-back drives, and I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in the big game when yes. the pressure's on. Mm-hmm. He's got to be able to deliver. The story for me with Oregon has been their defense. They have, you know, been outstanding. They gave up a few scores early in the year against Auburn, and since then, I think they went, three games without giving up a touchdown until finally Cal scored a touchdown on them.
Yep.
But their defense has been dominating. Andy Avalos came over from Boise State, brought in a different approach. Jim Levitt was there for the last few years, and Avalos has brought in a more of a multiple defense, more disguising, creating more confusion. And it's been working, you know, and he's had some pieces to work with, some new faces, some young energy, some speed. And so if their defense keeps playing the way they have been playing all year, as much as Herbert and the offense, because when you think Oregon, you think of offense. I'm very, very impressed with what they're doing. Now they've got to go to Seattle, and just because Washington lost this past week, I would be very careful in just writing that game off as, yeah. Well, Oregon's going to win that one.
No, exactly. I'm with you.
You know very well, in the Pacific Northwest, that is a big-time rivalry mm-hmm. game, and whoever's home is going to have a huge advantage. And that one's not this weekend, but the following weekend.
Yep.
If Oregon gets through that game, they're you know, there's still a long way to go. That's a tough conference, because you have 9 conference games, and it's just body blow after body blow. Mm-hmm. They still have to play SC on the road. Arizona's been kind of a good story. We haven't really touched on them much this year, but how about Summey, what he's been able to do? Mm-hmm. Tate came back last week. They went into Boulder and ended up outscoring the Buffs, which was if you're looking for surprises, that would maybe be one. The way they played and the way they really played all year.
Yeah. They've won 4 straight after that Hawaii loss, right?
Yeah.
4-1. And
think about how they lost
exactly.
that Hawaii game.
Yeah.
You know?
And I feel like Arizona's one of those programs where they're better when no one's paying attention, right?
Yep. Fair. Fair. And right now they're at the top. I don't know how much longer it'll last, because right now they're at the top of the standings in the Pac-12 South and starting to get some people's attention. And now, all of a sudden, people start to expect things from them, and so it becomes a different kind of pressure. And the timing this week is not in their best interest. They are back home, but now they take on Jacob Eason and Washington, who are coming off the defeat we just talked about to Stanford. So, man, there are so many good games this weekend. You know,
yep.
it's almost like, you know, where do you start? It's easy to get caught up in, you know, the high-profile games, but now that we're starting to get into conference play, you know, a game like Washington, Arizona is an example of what this weekend has to offer. Colorado and Oregon, also a game that's being played. I think it's that one's on Friday night. We just talked about Virginia and Miami. So this is when things start to really get interesting. When forget just talking about the playoff. Fans sometimes all they want to think about is the playoff. I think it's always interesting just to find out who's going to be able to try to stay in the hunt for a conference championship.
And you could make a case the Pac-12 is very much the opposite of the ACC, where the ACC has one great team and then just a bunch of, hey, let's figure it out. While the Pac-12 does not have a great team, you can make the case that they have six pretty good teams. Yep. And week in and week out, if you're not paying attention and if you're looking ahead, you're going to get punched in the face.
That's fair. That's fair. And like I said, nine conference games. I don't know if people understand how tough that can be, because you just don't get in that quote unquote easy game. You know, every game, every week, is a challenge. And so if you look at the Pac-12, you have Oregon, Stanford has shown what they're capable of. Even Oregon State is thinking about the possibility of trying to get to a bowl game. And then we all, of course, have Cal and Washington and Washington State. So there's depth, in the North. USC is still out there. Colorado, Arizona State with Herm, Utah, Arizona. I mean, other than UCLA, there just aren't, and Oregon State still, there just aren't any teams that you just kind of forget about. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it very, very taxing and challenging to try to make a run.
And if you forget about them, like Washington State did in that environment against UCLA, you could lose. And
yeah.
And then UCLA, that is for another day. Giving up 48 points at home to Oregon State, Chip, I feel like Chip may be in trouble. They're 1-5, 4 wins the last year and a half, and you look at the schedule, they may win 2 more games if they're lucky to steal a few games. And again, that's a topic for another day. I want to talk to you about one specific topic. Ohio State has been much discussed here, and they look like the number one team in the country, the way they just keep on performing. But when you look at the rest of the Big Ten, and Michigan getting on track, just finding a way with Iowa. Props to you on saying that you said it on game day, and when you said it, I was like, Pollock's going to kill me because I picked Iowa, and you nailed it. Because Don Brown's defense feasted on Nate Stanley in that pocket and three yeah. picks, and they were sacking him left and right. But when you look at the way this conference is, and you look at Wisconsin's dominance on defense and Jonathan Taylor, and you look at Penn State and what they're doing, I want to know the second-best team in the Big Ten Conference right now.
I probably would lean towards Wisconsin. I'm not yet sure if they have the balance in their offense to be able to win some of these big games that they have coming up. I think so far, Paul Christ has been very careful with his quarterback, Jack Cohn. Mm-hmm. He's not really putting him necessarily in a position not just to win games, but he's just throwing high percentage throws, not coming up with a lot of yards right now. They're kind of just dinking and dunking, but they haven't really needed to. You know, they have Jonathan Taylor. They have a great defense, and in their passing game, they're just doing what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but I think they're just so darn good at their DNA and what they do. I think their defense, I think their running game and playing just efficient complementary football gives them an edge. Penn State, you know, these next few weeks, we're going to learn so much about Sean Clifford, because yep. the defense is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean Clifford looks great, and I guess kind of like we're kind of guessing with Cone and Clifford, you know, who's going to be able to deliver more, because for them to win these games that they have coming up, starting this weekend, especially for Penn State, when they go up to Iowa, we've seen what Kinnick Stadium can do to Penn State.
Yep.
How will they handle it? And is Sean Clifford ready to make plays and be, because in that offense, especially Wisconsin's offense, it's about the tailback.
Mm-hmm.
And Penn State's offense, it's about the quarterback, and he's got to be able to make plays on the move, running, throwing, creating, and all the time avoiding disaster. So, This is the weekend we really see where Penn State is and where Clifford is. And if he plays outstanding, then I would give Penn State the edge over Wisconsin.
I'm with you. I 100% agree. And we're going to learn again at Iowa, then Michigan, and then at Michigan State. And the next 3 weeks, we'll get an idea of Clifford, because the defense is so athletic. They can move everywhere. And meanwhile, you mentioned
By the way, yeah. How about that run that they have at Iowa?
Mm-hmm.
Home for a whiteout against Michigan, And then no bye weeks here.
None.
Then they go to East Lansing, and you could say whatever you want about Michigan State. That Penn State, Michigan State, every year, it's just everybody's getting in the middle. It's just a fight. Yep. They're just brawling, you know. So that's the third week, and if they're still standing, they got to go to Minneapolis,
yes,
and take on PJ Fleck and the way Minnesota and Tanner Morgan, the way they're playing. You talk about a four, and then they got Indiana and Indiana's offense with the way they're throwing the football. So, and then Ohio State. So they are going to hopefully, knock on wood, hopefully Penn State stays healthy during that stretch. But man, that is a heck of a run beginning this week at Iowa City.
And if everything goes according to plan, Minnesota will be coming into that game off a bye undefeated because they got Nebraska, Rutgers,
right,
and then Maryland. So you could see that idea where both these teams could be undefeated in that matchup at Minnesota on November 9th. Which would be great. I think it'd be great for the conference. It'd be great to see, you know, a team like Minnesota coming in, rolling and turning things around. And Wisconsin, you brought up a great point about not opening things up. They haven't had to. They haven't trailed all season because of that defense, those three shutouts. Now, granted, you can make a case on who have they played, but it's not their fault. And I think it's a perfect timing for them to get everything together as you see the schedule, and then October 26th on the road at the Shoe at Ohio State.
Yeah, and Jimmy Leonard, the defensive coordinator from Wisconsin, last year they were beaten up. You know, they had so many injuries, and it took a toll on the outcomes of many of the games in 2018. The good thing about going through that is almost all those players return this year. So what you have now is tremendous depth. And so you get a lot of these players that were hurt are now back. And the players that stepped in now have 5, 6, 7 games of experience. And now you're talking about having a powerful unit and a unit right now that's playing probably with as much confidence as any unit in the Big Ten. So they've been fun to watch. You're right. The challenges will get much, much tougher beginning this weekend at home with Brian Lewerke and Michigan State's offense. And another game. You know, we keep talking about games Saturday, and while the big high-profile games will steal the headlines, man, you talk about depth of great games. It's another one. Michigan State going to Madison, and both teams obviously need to try to get a win.
We'll be back in a minute as we ask Herbie about the biggest matchup this coming weekend. So many to pick from. But first, a word from Goodyear.
Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven.
Now back to the show. We talked about the whole hype of this week. What's the game you can't wait to see in Week 7?
The one game, if I could only pick one.
Yeah.
Because
we haven't even touched on Oklahoma, Texas.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Or USC,
yeah.
Notre Dame. But is there one game when you look at matchups that you can't wait to see?
I would probably say LSU, Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, because of the rankings, because what's at stake for both these teams with who they still have left to play, neither team can afford a loss. So anytime you play in a game where neither team can afford a loss, you always love that. Not to mention where the game's being played. It's at night. It's just one of those games, you know, you want to see. So if you could only pick one, I would probably lean to that game. But OU Texas is, yep, is always fun. I'm a traditionalist. I love those kind of games. And so, yeah, that would be the next one right there.
Real quick before we get to our listeners and their questions, is Texas's secondary up for the challenge against Oklahoma's offense?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think they are. They've struggled, and they've had so many injuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll have to see as the week progresses how healthy they are and whether or not they're able to get some people back. But I think this is your typical. I don't think OU's secondary is going to stop Sam Ehlinger either.
Yep.
So I think it's very similar to what they did last year with one another, where Kyler Murray went up and down the field. Sam Ehlinger went up and down the field. It came down to basically which quarterback had the ball last, and it was Texas got in the field goal position and ended up winning the game. I think it's going to be kind of your typical back and forth game. We keep talking about OU's defense, man. They look better. They look good. Well, this is the weekend we find out if Alex Grinch, who came over from Ohio State and definitely has kind of got these guys playing with a different, I think it's a different confidence. There's a different feeling about them. Now, think about who they played up to this point. The only game that they really got challenged against some pretty good athletes, I would say, was the Houston game early and Derek King before he decided to redshirt, and they scored 31 points on him. Since then, they played South Dakota, UCLA, Texas Tech, who's capable offensively, and they shut them down at 16 points. And then Kansas, they gave up 20. So, again, they look better, but this is the weekend I think we really find out how much they've improved. But I see, as we sit here early in the week, I see a kind of a traditional Big 12 shootout, a lot of points, both quarterbacks having big, big days, and ultimately who comes down to making more plays and probably having the ball last.
And one thing that really stood out the last time we watched Oklahoma's, you know, that Kansas game. Kansas, they were in that game in that first half. And they made some mistakes, and you look at, there could have been a pick six that was, you know, the D-back had a cast on, couldn't make the catch. And then Puka Williams did a really good job running against Oklahoma. The question will be, how's the health status of Texas in that running back situation, considering DuVernay's been great, but like, they can't keep anybody healthy in the backfield to help Ellinger. Anybody.
Yeah, I know. And that, and if you think even back to last year, he was playing through some injuries himself. You know, he had a shoulder, and he became almost a running back for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he has one of those personalities, whatever it takes kind of mindset. And, you know, I think it's all hands on deck for Texas this week and anything that they can do, because they'll need balance. Ellinger, he's a great player. He's got great receivers. You know, but you don't want to do it, obviously, all through the air. They're going to have to make some plays on the ground, and hopefully they'll have some bodies able to help them be able to have that balance.
All right, time for your questions here. It's been great. Once again, we want to remind everybody, if you want to ask Kirby a question, leave us a 5-star review. You may get the chance to ask Kirby your question in the comments. Just put your question there. The best ones will be selected by our great producers. Let's start with Sappy Boo 15, and he says, what do you believe Iowa's ceiling is? How does Nate Stanley stack up against other QBs in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think most people came into this year thinking that he had a chance to have a big year. I think most people felt that he's an NFL quarterback. He's got, you know, 3 years of experience now of being a starter. There's every reason to believe that. And if you look at where they sit right now after a loss to Michigan, you know, they're still sitting there at 4-1 overall. It's going to be tough, I think, in that division because of Wisconsin and even Minnesota to be able to get the upper hand and make a run. They got Penn State this weekend, which will be tough for them. I think they end up going to Madison. They get Minnesota at home. And at the end of the year, they go to Lincoln. So, you know, I would say as we sit here, midway point, I think they're on the outside looking in as far as winning the West because of the loss this past week to Michigan. But, you know, they're still, I mean, that's Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa can be, lose a tough one, heartbreaking style to Michigan, go back to Kinnick, find a way at night to rally the troops and you know what I mean? Knock off Penn State. Now they're right back in the mix. So, I mean, that's Kirk Ferentz and Iowa, and you don't ever count them out. I mean, that's probably a 9-10 win team this year for Iowa.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, Kinnick was phenomenal in that Penn State game. That finish was fantastic. I'm not sure if it was great for Hawkeye fans, but it was fantastic if you're just watching it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Seaburg Football 7. Most teams are down in the ACC, one being Virginia Tech. What is your opinion on where they are as a program, and where do you think they're heading? Is Fuente the right coach to fix this?
Oh, I hope so, because, you know, I'm a fan of his. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great coach. I think sometimes you talk about fits. You know, is he a right fit? Is any coach a right fit? You know, because what he did at Memphis, that speaks for itself. He obviously can coach. He's been around some great head coaches as an assistant. I know they just had a big win against Miami, but I'm still just kind of holding my thoughts as to whether or not his coaching style fits. He's replacing a living legend in Frank Beamer. Beamer ball. Hokies fans, much like Florida, they think of Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer. It's not good enough to just win. They want to score a lot of points, you know, and there's certain places they want to do it a certain way. And I just wonder if that brand of Beamer ball and the style and the memories of those Hokies fans and the expectations of how Frank Beamer carried himself on and off the field, is that Justin Fuente? Is that what they expect? And is he able to kind of meet that standard and what they want to see from their head coach? Time will tell. Winning obviously makes everything okay, and they've not been able to do that with the exception of that first year he was there. But if you look at the roster, to me, Kevin, I just don't see the personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're really young. Yeah. Ton of freshmen and sophomores, but I just don't see the personnel that I'm used to seeing on Virginia Tech's teams. And we have a pulse in Charlottesville. You know, Bronco Mendenhall, he looks like Virginia Tech. Like Virginia plays like Virginia Tech used to play. It's almost like these programs have switched jerseys some weeks when I watch.
You're right.
You know, it's like, and their roster looks athletic.
Yep.
And they play like with a blue collar edge to them, much like the Hokies teams used to. So time will tell, but Justin's a great coach, a great person. I think he's outstanding. I'm waiting to see if he's the right fit. As we talked earlier during this podcast, you know, players last year that are hoping for a loss so they don't have to go to a bowl game.
That is just weird. Yeah.
Just strange things that maybe are out of his control, but same time you're the head coach, so you got to get it right.
Yeah, when you hear something like that, you start to say, what's really going on that we won't see on the field? What's going on behind the scenes?
And they have players, I don't know how many players left over the last couple of years.
Starting with Josh Jackson, right?
Yeah.
The future of that program when they brought him in and you're like, oh, this kid, he's a freshman. He could be something and turn things around. All right, our final question here from Josh Harrison. The topic of Clemson's new defensive strategy was brought up recently where they were playing six DBs on the field at a time. I believe Nagandi mentioned that this could possibly be to prepare for Alabama's receivers who are athletic, and I could see that point. With that said, how does that style of defense match up against a more downhill, run-heavy attack like Georgia's if that's the matchup that took place in the college football playoff? That's a good question.
Yeah, first of all, Brent Venables, probably the top defensive mind in the game. He is coaching to his team's strength. Last year, his team's strength was the front. This year, his team's strength is the back seven. So what he's doing is using different bodies that have versatility. So you have like a Tanner Muse or Isaiah Simmons. They can do different things. You know, they can come and I would throw Kayvon Wallace into that too. Sometimes they can come up into the box and be run support guys and almost like outside linebackers. And other times they'll rotate and play deep, almost like a free safety. And so he's mixing and matching and confusing the quarterbacks in the process. Now, if he played at Georgia, you know, with Jake Fromm and Swift, the running back, he's going to set his defense based on the offense that he's playing. I don't personally think he's going to 5 and 6 defensive backs to get ready for Tua. I don't even think that's in his mind. I think right now he's playing the cards that he's dealt. Last year, as I said, it was Wilkins and Farrell and that group. And now it's more experience and more ability on the back end. And he's trying to get his best players on the field and rotating whoever he can to get in based on the strength of his defense and the opponent that he's facing that week. And let's face it, almost everybody's running some version of the spread, 3 and 4 wide receivers. And so I think you'll continue to see this defense, and it's working. And I give him a lot of credit because last year it was a very different approach. And this year it's working, and it's a very, very different style in how he's attacking. And I think it just shows you, much like we talk about offensive coordinators adjusting to their quarterbacks, like Ryan Day at Ohio State. Last year had Haskins, more drop back, more distribution. This year with Justin Fields, you're seeing quarterback run, and also at the same time they're throwing the ball. So Brent Venables, I think, is just adjusting to the personnel that he has.
Some great questions. Keep it up, though. We've done this a few weeks. We've enjoyed a lot of these smart questions too coming your way, Herbie. And I've learned one thing that
Cajun food's your thing, huh? I didn't know that. You're going to the region where Cajun food's like, I'm with you, but like, I'm jealous that you get the chance of what you guys go there. You're in game day in that environment, what, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? So you're going to have your fill.
Absolutely. We're going to go to, my favorite place is Rufino's. He's a former, offensive lineman there that has just an amazing restaurant and, redfish. With a lot of different spices, and I like heat. I'm all about,
nice.
I like to crank it up a little bit. So yeah, I love going down to that region and partaking. It's a lot of fun. But the tailgating scene at Baton Rouge, I don't know if the playoff committee came out, they would have to probably have them as a one seed. They're exceptional at getting ready for the games.
All right, good stuff. Enjoy the week. Looking forward to talking to you on Tuesday on SportsCenter. And honestly, I'm just happy for you that the temps are going to be in the low 70s.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to Herbie for joining us to get his thoughts on the weekend's biggest storylines. Also, it's great to hear that he likes spicy food. I'll keep that in mind. If you like what you're hearing, leave us a 5-star review. You may get the chance to ask Herbie your question. Put your question in the comments section. The best ones will make the air. We've had some really good ones over the last few weeks. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, Carhartt, and Goodyear. Big thanks to our producer. And we have multiple ones, Taylor Schwenk and Gabe Bassane behind the glass. Great work from those guys. Wondering what Vegas thinks about this week's games? Check out the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast as they break down games and make their picks. Remember to subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, as well as the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock, wherever you get your podcast. Ahead on Wednesday, Pollock, he comes out of his cave after watching film for 48 hours. Joins us along with Ivan Maisel to break down the best of the week and the players you should be talking about to impress your friends in week 7. Plenty of good stuff coming your way Wednesday and Friday. Thank you. Enjoy the week.